Hello, Q-Drop listeners. Today we have a guest who I asked to join us specifically because I think she can be a source of hope for those of us who have a loved one down the rabbit hole. Stephanie Kemmerer is an ex-conspiracy theorist who submersed herself in 9/11 trutherism, false flag events, and more. By her own submission, she was hyper-focused on these ideas that they had an objectively negative effect on many aspects of her real life. In this episode, we're going to find out how she got herself out of this mindset. We'll hear advice on how to talk to your Q. And finally, Stephanie is going to tell us about the project she's working on to fight the rise of conspiratorial thinking and provide a soft space to land when you pull yourself out of the rabbit hole. Just a quick note to remind you that you can find video of this interview on our YouTube channel. The link is in the show notes. You're also going to get access to patron-only episodes on our Patreon. That link is also in the show notes. Now, let's chat with Stephanie. So why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about you, who you are, what you do, etc.
My name is Stephanie Kemmerer. I'm a freelance writer, and I specialize on conspiracy theory culture. And I'm also a former conspiracy theorist, big time.
Yes. So when did you start to show an interest in conspiracy theories and fringe ideas and stuff like that?
All my life. I remember like 7, 8 years old reading those Time Life Mysteries of the Unknown books. And, you know, like most kids my age were reading about, I don't know, whatever kids read about. And, you know, I'm reading about Spring-Heeled Jack, you know? So I've always had kind of like that witchy sensibility. I love the occult and the unexplained, the weird stuff. There's so much of a wide, amazing world out there. And, you know, as a little kid, you don't realize that those things can lead to darker things. And they often do. You know, but I didn't really get into it until like maybe 2013, 2014. That's when I went hard.
Yeah. I was similar. Like I loved like Unsolved Mysteries and what else? Like I used to like read all the ghost story books and stuff like that. I was always very fascinated with that stuff. And even in my 20s, which was a very long time ago, I was into conspiracy theories too, but it was always for me, it was always fun. And it was never like, I don't think there was much that I truly believed. I was open. Let's just say it that way. Like I was open to being to having the proof shown to me that something was true, but you know, that never happened. So
there is a point where you're just trying the heroin and then you're hooked on it. And there's a very, very fine line between that. And I always compare it to drugs because it is an addiction.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember like something that you wrote in your article was about like the connections and how when you make those connections, you get like that kind of buzz, right? Like, and I remember that from those days. I'd be like, oh my gosh, that makes sense, right? And it's like this exhilarating feeling. So I kind of know where you're coming from here. I was raised by my parents, obviously, and they are the ones who are down the rabbit hole. So I'm very much like them. I think I'm more of a realist, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. And it is, and for people who are in the rabbit hole, conspiracy theories can feel very real because they offer, as ridiculous and crazy as some of their answers are, they still resonate and they make sense.
Yeah, that's exactly, I think with my parents, they're always saying, it just makes sense. This makes more sense than that. And something that I've realized, because I've been a blogger in the skeptic online community since 2014. And something that I realized during that time is that reality has absolutely no obligation to make sense to you.
No, it doesn't. I mean, for me, you know, controlled demolition made perfect sense. And now that I've actually been heavily researching 9/11, like for real, I don't, you know, there was a time when I couldn't believe that anyone thought that anything other than demolition brought down those buildings. Now I can't believe that anyone thinks anything other than systemic fire and poor structural, like the structures of the staircases. That's why so many people died. Like, and I think that's the thing that I try to tell people is there is a conspiracy, a real one, in every conspiracy theory. It's just not as fun as the conspiracy theory. Like, if you want to go into 9/11 conspiracies, I tell people, let's talk about the building codes. And people are like, that's boring. I'm like, well, that's the real conspiracy to 9/11. You know, so it's very, you can find those hidden, bizarre, shocking elements, but you just have to look a little bit deeper than the conspiracy theories.
Yes. So what would you say caused you to get sucked down the rabbit hole more seriously?
Well, I had that, like, you know, my mind was already open to it. And that is one of the things that experts say, you know, if you're a little bit more open to it, you're more likely to fall in. But it was also, you know, looking back on it, hated my life. I just hated everything. I didn't have friends. I felt powerless. I felt out of control. I felt useless and worthless and just depression and depression and depression. And those are the things that really, you know, underneath every conspiracy theory is a reason why someone's unhappy. And that's what draws you into that and makes you feel special. So I just was not a happy person. And I had heard the 9/11 stuff like so many times. But for some reason, when I saw Zeitgeist, it really like got me into 9/11 big time. And I've heard that on the podcast, The New Conspiracists. It's a British podcast. They always ask their guests, like, oh, you know, what got you into conspiracies? And they're like, Zeitgeist. It's the same thing for every guest. They all say the same thing. And that movie is so dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because like I've interviewed quite a few people who have lost loved ones to QAnon, and they all seem to have that in common, that there's something kind of missing from their life. There's kind of a void that they're filling with this. And it's interesting because recently we've seen Joe Rogan hassling that scientist. What's his name? Peter Hotez or something like that.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, debating Robert Kennedy Jr. about vaccines. And I kind of was like thinking about Robert Kennedy Jr. and learning what I have from doing my podcast. I've realized that like this man, his entire life has just been like one tragedy after another, right? Like his uncle was assassinated, then his father was assassinated, then his cousin died in an airplane crash. I think he has an aunt who was lobotomized. Like, it's just one thing after another, right, with that family. And so it makes sense that this man has created this alternate reality around all of this stuff to kind of explain why, like, there was a conspiracy theory. It's easier, I think, to blame a human conspiracy against his family than it is to accept that life can just be randomly cruel. Like, because you can't defeat that, right? You can't fight that.
No, you can't. You can't. And you see that a lot with, like, David Icke, where his books infuse you with such a sense of so much being under control and out of your power. and you're looking for the solution. Okay, man, you sold me the problem. Now sell me the solution. And solution was love. Okay, so I'm going to love the reptilians and they're just going to stop sucking our adrenochrome or something. It never made sense. And if you're going to present someone with a problem, then you better damn well have some idea of a solution. And it should not be in the form of Alex Jones's toothpaste or health supplements. You know, you should have an actual solution. And now, like with Ike, we've seen Ike further radicalized. And I think that might be because of his association with Alex, where Ike was the biggest cause of 5G tower destruction, like from his interviews and the stuff that he was saying. But there's never a real solution to any of these problems. And that just doesn't, that whole lack of a solution either leads to further radicalization or just further nihilism. It's such a nihilistic worldview. When you take the red pill, you're also taking a black pill.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good quote. You were talking about also in your article about how it was kind of like a cycle where it's like this sort of mindset would alienate you from people and the alienation would solidify the mindset, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I was actually kind of lucky that I didn't have a lot of friends at the time, because we've seen where friendships can actually keep people in that mindset where, you know, you're quote unquote normal, and then you go into conspiracy theories and then you lose the original friends. So now all you have are your conspiracy friends. And if you want to get out, that fear of being alone is what keeps you in. So for me, like, I didn't really have friends. I started really making them afterwards. And that was actually a blessing for me, that I was a sad, lonely person.
Yeah. How did this, along the same lines, how did this affect your mental health?
I was just in really just constant like ailments, and I've been diagnosed with fibromyalgia, and like I kept focusing on that, and I had been misdiagnosed with borderline personality disorder, which is harder to treat than schizophrenia, because schizophrenia can be treated with antipsychotics and borderline personality disorder takes intensive therapy. And it's so intense that the therapist requires therapy while they're treating you. And when I was told by three therapists and a psychiatrist that I did not have it, those symptoms actually started going away. But it didn't get really better until after the conspiracy theories. And I was manifesting Asperger's and, you know, depression, and just, I had a lot of, like, I was focused on everything that was wrong with me, and that focusing manifested the symptoms worse. So it was just like this huge systemic, like, body failure almost.
Wow. That sounds awful.
Yeah.
Did this have an effect on relationships in your life, like your family and stuff?
Well, I had just moved out to California in 2015, and the ex-boyfriend that I moved out here with, we're still friends today. He kind of tried pulling me out of he was into the conspiracy theories too, but he's in like IT. So, you know, that mindset, he's able to divorce himself and pull himself out much easier because of that mindset. And he was trying to kind of talk me out of it. But that never really caused much of a rift in our relationship. It wasn't so much the conspiracy theories as it was just the depression and the oppositional defiance and stuff like that.
Yeah. What were some of the things that you believed that caused your mental health to decline?
Well, I eventually became a no-planer. Like, I thought that the planes on 9/11 were CGI. And when I ran dry on 9/11, because you can only watch so many 9/11 conspiracy theory documentaries, they say that marijuana is a gateway drug. Well, 9/11 was kind of a gateway drug. And I started watching Jim Fetzer, and Boston Marathon was a false flag. And then I landed on Sandy Hook. So I became a false flagger. And I wasn't absolutely sure that no one died, but I was kind of falling on the side of no one died at Sandy Hook.
Wow. That's wild. Did this have an effect on like your career, your ability to support yourself?
Well, I was running my own cleaning service. I was actually working full time, and I didn't talk to people about those things too much because, and I think every conspiracy theorist knows this, like they have that little voice in the back of their head that tells them this shit is crazy. People don't want to hear it. Don't talk to them about it, but somehow they override it. But I did kind of manage to avoid that with people, but I was too needy. I wanted friends so bad, and I was clingy, and I could see the looks in people's faces if I started to open up, and I was like, I'm not so sure about Sandy Hook, and they're like, are you sure? And I'm like, why are you giving me that look? But inside, I knew why they were giving me that look.
Yeah. That must have been challenging.
Yeah.
How did you, you believed in some pretty serious stuff. So how did you escape that? Like, how did you pull yourself out of that?
My one friend came out to visit us. They came from Pennsylvania, where I originally lived, out to California. They brought their son, and the one night we were talking, and I made a casual comment like, I'm not so sure about that Sandy Hook thing. I think it was staged. And my one friend looked at me right in the eye and said, Steph, I work with someone who lost their kid at Sandy Hook. I'm sorry, I get a little choked up just thinking. And in books you read about a character and like it takes a whole page to describe a split second decision. It was kind of like that. And my mind played back like 20 years of friendship. My mind played back, I trust this person, I know this person. And the conspiracy theory voice in my head said, ask for the parent's name. But then like the real person, the empathic person said, don't. And I realized in that moment that I don't ever need to know that parent's name. And I think I figured out which parent it was. And I told my friend that, and I said, I don't want you to tell me if I'm right or wrong. And it wasn't the fact of if they were lying to me or not. And I don't think they were. It's the fact I had this thought that, holy shit, there is someone out there who's a friend of a friend of a friend of a friend who's been affected by one of these things. And if you ask enough people, hey, do you know someone who died in 9/11? Do you know someone affected by Sandy Hook? They may not, but someone that they know may know someone. So I actually used like that analytical conspiracy theory part of my brain to kind of figure out that there are people out there that are affected by this stuff. And somewhere out there is, that's the evidence that these things were real. And I clammed my mouth and I apologized. And I really, really worked hard to hold back from crying. But there is someone out there, a friend of a friend, who's been affected by this stuff. And you can't fake that. And I saw that at, I ate at a sushi restaurant not far from San Bernardino a few years after that happened. And they had pictures of some of the victims on the restaurant wall saying, remembering our patrons. And that struck me as, you can't fake that. Who would fake that detail? You know what I mean? Who would put pictures of people on their wall? And, so that kind of also solidified that whole idea in my head of, there's someone out there that you know in some way who's connected to this.
Yeah. So what was the process after that? Like, how did everything kind of unravel after that? Did you drop like all your conspiracies immediately after, or was it a process?
It was like an immediate process. Like, there was a process, but it kind of happened quickly. After they went back home, I was home alone and I looked up a 7-part YouTube series on debunking 9/11. I decided to skip Sandy Hook. I that was too raw and I already had confirmation that it happened. So I went back to the start, and I really wish I remember who did the series so I could give them credit. I really wish I remember the series. They went step by step through most of the 9/11 stuff and debunked it. In the last part, they talked about the locus of control, and they said that a conspiracy theorist will wake up, hit the snooze button, then they're running late to work and they're yelling at the slow driver in front of them instead of accepting responsibility for what they've done. And I'll always remember this moment. I paused the video and I'm home all alone. I looked up from my phone and I said, that's me. I'm not going to be like this anymore. I said it out loud. Like, I was like, this is me. I'll blame the slow driver. And I know I've done it thousands of times. And I was like, I don't want to be like this anymore. And I just, but that takes years. It takes, between saying it and doing it, that takes a long, long time. But that was, I think that the combination of the friend having a personal connection to Sandy Hook, coupled with, the shame of knowing what an irresponsible dork I had been, that just those two things perfectly combined, and just was like, wow, okay, I'm not going to do this anymore.
Mm-hmm. So how did your life change after that?
It took a while, and I wasn't really interested in delving into that stuff. I was like, it was like around 2017 when I got out, and I was okay to just let that part of me go. And I still had unanswered questions about Sandy Hook and unanswered questions about 9/11, but I was too afraid to look into them that I would fall back in. If something didn't quite make sense, I was afraid I would fall back in. But around 2020, when everyone started losing their minds, and I saw people I knew on Facebook losing their minds, I was like, I didn't even know I was talking to QAnon. I didn't even really know what QAnon was. But all these people that I knew in real life were like, you know, they sounded like I used to, and that, and I was like, look, you don't want to be the way I used to be, man. And that's when I kind of started really taking an interest in all of it. You know, like I wasn't there from the start with the QAnon and all that. I mean, I was watching Pizzagate videos when, you know, right around the time QAnon was starting. And, but it resonated with me that all of these people were just, these normal people I knew in real life were just posting weird things on Facebook. And I was like, well, you know, maybe they'll listen to someone who used to be like that.
Mm-hmm. Did any of them listen to you?
No, not really. And in fact, I completely ditched a former friend because she was calling her kids damaged. And I had this mental image, you know, I'm going to call CPS on her. But number one, what would that do? And number two, everybody knows that dealing with CPS, like, are they really going to take kids away from a mom because she calls them damaged? No, they don't care. And do you really want to do that? No. You know, like I had like revenge fantasies, like, oh, you're going to call your kids damaged. Well, I'm going to get, no, that's not the right way to do it, you know? And my final message to her was, your poor kids. I feel really bad for your kids that they're going to have to grow up being called damaged.
Why was she calling them damaged?
Because one of them had autism. So, you know, and this was a fairly normal person. And I know a few people who had autistic kids. One of my ex-boyfriends has an autistic kid, and I tell him all the time, I'm like, I am so thankful that you're not an idiot. And he always laughs. And I'm like, you love your children and you don't blame your child's autism on vaccines. He's like, oh, that's all bullshit.
Yeah.
So I could see how a parent would want to do that, because you don't want to sit there and go, oh, was it that time I took ecstasy a few months before I got pregnant? Or was it all that weed I smoked? Was it something I did? You don't want to think it's something you did, you know? But I've seen both sides of that where, you know, autistic parents are like, well, this happened to my kid and I'm going to love them and take care of them and life's going to go on. And then there are the others that are like, stop everything. My child's damaged. You know, and the dichotomy between the two, it's sad.
We had a guest on whose mother was down the QAnon rabbit hole, and he was on the spectrum. His fiance was on the spectrum, and they had a son who was also on the spectrum. And so she not only would call him damaged and his fiance, but would also blame him for getting his son vaccinated. And that's why his son had autism. And this guy was stuck living with them because he didn't make enough to move out. He worked at like a dollar store or something. And it was just so heartbreaking to just listen to him. He's just the sweetest guy, loves his kid no matter what, and seems like a great future husband. And his mom just can't accept any of it. And it's just so sad.
And when I hear that, though, like, all I can think of is the euthanasia project that the Nazis went through. Like, that's, and I'm not trying to use a slippery slope argument, but the Nazis had to declare those people damaged before going ahead with murdering them. And, you know, and it's like, you're using Nazi language when you call your child damaged. And do you want me to go into detail about what the Nazis did? Because even conspiracy theorists never seem to understand the exact brutality of what they did.
Yeah. And they don't understand either that it didn't start with genocide. That's not how it started. It started with rhetoric. It started with changing the narrative.
Yeah. And dehumanization. When you dehumanize, and that's what you're doing when you call your kids damaged.
Yeah, exactly. Agreed. Have your political leanings changed since you got out of the rabbit hole?
I'm more left, but I'm less like radical. And I realize that I was kind of edging towards the right a little bit. Like, no matter how left you are, when you go in the rabbit hole, you are eventually going to go towards the right. It's just a natural course of action. And I'm more reasonable. I'm more, you know, I'm one of those people. I vote blue no matter who, but I'm not happy with either party. And, you know, there is a little bit of like nihilism in it, but maybe it's more of a realism where it's like, nobody is actually fixing any problem, but I'm also viewing the problems from a more realistic perspective, you know, and let's assume 9/11 was an inside job, which it wasn't, but let's assume that. Is that the most important issue? Really? Is that really the most important issue? No, it isn't. And there are other things to focus on. And I do like to tell people that conspiracy theories distract us from reality.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. And yeah, it's like both my parents have always been very left wing, and they got sucked down the rabbit hole. And of course now, you know, they say things that are more right. And it's very strange coming from my parents, because I was raised, like, I'm 46, and this started happening maybe, I don't know, 10 years ago, and it was very mild 10 years ago. And then when the pandemic hit, it like kicked into high gear. And so for over 30 years, I lived with two parents. Well, I didn't live with them that whole time, but you know what I mean? I had two parents who were very, very left wing. So it's very strange to hear like my dad, my anti-gun dad, talk about why he needs a gun, or my parents praising Putin or Trump. Like, it's just crazy.
Sorry. Yeah. I'm so sorry. I mean, I know I'm laughing a little, but I mean, honestly, it's an uncomfortable laugh, and I'm so sorry that you're going through this. And I think it's painful.
It is. Although there have been some promising signs lately that they might be pulling away from it. So we'll see. Maybe it's me just hoping too much, but we'll see. What do you think draws people down the rabbit hole in the first place?
That's a great question. And I think it's, there's like the broader spectrum of, you know, that sense of powerlessness and hopelessness and unhappiness. But I think there's like a specific element that is unique to each person within that broader spectrum. And for me, and I think this might actually be it for a lot of people too, I wanted to be the smartest person in the room. I wanted to know everything. But the problem is, when you think you know everything, you don't know anything. You know, and, you know, I knew everything about 9/11. Well, why didn't I hear the story of the 9/11 Blood Brothers until the 20th anniversary? Because I really didn't know anything about 9/11.
Yeah. What is the story of the 9/11 Blood Brothers?
Stanley Prainmuth was on the 81st floor, and Brian Clark was on the 84th of the South Tower. And Stanley saw the plane coming right at him and leapt under his desk. Brian's trying to escape, and he meets a bunch of people in the stairway that say, you can't go down, you got to go up. Well, we all know anyone who went up died that day. Well, Brian hears a voice calling for help. He goes in search of the voice. He helps Stanley out. They both have cuts on their hands. He pulls Stanley out. Stanley lands on him, kisses him, and they rub their hands together. They both had cuts. And they said, we're brothers today. And they both escaped. And they're still friends.
That's awesome.
I didn't know that story. I didn't know. That's my favorite story.
Yeah, that's a good story.
And yeah, and that's what it steals from us. That's what the conspiracy theories steal from us. And I've been doing a Patreon series on 9/11, things that they steal from us. And that's...
Oh, that would be so interesting.
That's one of the best stories. Give me that story. I mean, there's so many sad stories that day. But give me that story. I want to hear about Stanley and Brian. I want to hear, like, write a children's book about their further adventures, you know? Like,
yeah.
there's so much to that. That's just so, it's so, and I guess if you're a conspiracy theorist, you would think, oh, well, that's a little too perfect. It can't be real or something. But sometimes reality is perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes people do survive a plane by hiding under their desk.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really interesting. I've always loved that. Was it Mr. Rogers who said, when a tragedy happens, look for the helpers? And I think that whole attitude is absolutely stolen from people when they believe in the conspiracy theories, because everybody's in on it and everybody's guilty. And there, you can't believe in the good of humanity anymore. You can't have faith in humanity anymore. And it's really devastating to see that, especially in people like my parents, who spent their entire career helping people. Like, they were devoted to helping people in so many ways. And to have them all of a sudden completely lose their faith in humanity and not trust anybody and not feel like anybody's worthy of helping, it's really devastating to see that, because the majority of people are good. You know, the majority of people on this planet are good and decent people just trying to do their best, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I had a moment of that even after I was out of conspiracy theories, when the Gilbert Garlic Festival shooting happened. I think 3 or 4 people died there. Because Gilroy isn't that far from me. And I'll tell you, it is the stinkiest town on earth. It's all garlic. I can't imagine anyone hanging their laundry out. And I tried the garlic wine. It's awful. but when that happened, you know, I was like looking at, I think one of the victims was a 13-year-old girl, and like everyone was saying all this nice stuff. And I said to my boss at the time, I'm like, and I was so cynical about it. I was like, how is it that it's, you know, all these wonderful people that get killed by this stuff? And this was after I was out of the conspiracy theories. And she looked at me and she was like, because most people are generally good. And I was like, oh, shit. I just stuffed my foot in my mouth again.
Yeah. It's true, though. Like, I think, like, the internet gives us this distorted idea of what people are like, because everybody's so over the top and angry and argumentative on the internet. And then you go and you meet those same people in real life, and it's not like that at all, you know? And it's like, I think, like, one of the things when Elon bought Twitter, I kind of took a break from Twitter for a bit, because I was just, it was just too much for me. And my dog.
Is it a dog, or is it a crisis dog?
Yeah. Oh, she has a lot of opinions like me. Yeah, so I took a break from Twitter, and it's like after it was a couple of weeks, I think, over Christmas, and I just realized that the world just isn't as bleak as Twitter would make you think it is. And so it's, I don't know, it's good to remind yourself that most people are good and decent people. They're reasonable. Even if they have weird ideas, you can talk to them. They'll hear you. They might consider it, you know, like not everything is Twitter, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I did, and if I can give him a shout out, my friend Chris, we met on Facebook, and he's one of those people where he's like, oh, this person, like, used a comma in the wrong place. I'm blocking them. But somehow he stuck with me. We've never met in person. He lives in Canada. I'm hoping to go up to visit him sometime soon. He stuck with me. You know, like the slightest wrong that someone would do, he would just block them and never talk to them again. And that was okay with him. He admitted to me that he had me mute it for a little while on Facebook when I was a conspiracy theorist, but he stuck with me. And he's been my biggest supporter. You know, I went back on Facebook just so I could interact with him because he left Twitter. And I'll post an article that I just wrote or something, and he's the first person to like it. And I love you so much, Chris. And he stuck with me. He stuck with me through that. And that, sorry, I'm getting choked up. That to me, you know, a friend that you've never met in person, but we've been friends for like 7-8 years. And it was like, yeah, you were pretty annoying back then. And I did have you mute it, but we're still friends. You know, and I think that was also part of the recovery, knowing Chris is still here, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that kind of brings me to another question that I wanted to ask is, and this is something that I know that all of our listeners are constantly wondering, is how do you interact with somebody who's down there, who's down the rabbit hole, but who you care about? How do you talk to them? What's the right way to go about that?
Well, I think there's kind of several, it's a multi-part answer, sort of. Like, one part is, I call it like the mental calculus. Like, you know, that entire page in the book, that's really just a split second in reality. You have to do all of these mental calculations in a split second. It's, how close am I to this person? How long have we known each other? How well do we know each other? You know, think about some great big adventures you've had together. Or for me, you know, like with Chris, I'll just be sitting in my room getting ready for bed, and some silly thing he said will pop into my head and I'll just burst out laughing. You know, look for those moments. How close are you to this person, and how much time are you willing to invest? And what is your physical proximity? You know, if it's someone you live with, then it is something you're definitely going to have to embark on. You know, if it's, you know, some friend from high school that you have casual interactions with online and you're probably never going to see again, it might not be worth the time and effort, you know. But so the first part is you have to do those mental calculations. Like when I cold called the Ground Zero volunteer and he started talking about reptilians, I was like, okay, I don't know this guy, but this is our first time interacting, and this is putting my mental health in danger. You know, and I still feel guilty. Like, I should have tried to talk him down, but he wanted a debate, not a discussion. And so you have to decide, you know, what's your return on investment, you know? And that's part of it. And the other part is, okay, so if you do the calculation and you're like, all right, this is someone that I want to invest my time with, you try and kind of divert the conversation away from the conspiracy stuff. And like, I don't need to know about controlled demolition, Bob or Jim or whatever. You know, what's going on in your life, man? And if you can get them to open up, you're going to find a wall of pain behind all of that, you know, and like, oh, well, you lost your job recently, man, that's a real bummer. Let's talk about that, you know, because that's the under, if your closest person and you can put the time in and you're able to find what's really going on in their life, if you can help them fix that problem, then you don't even have to approach the conspiracy theories. A lot of times that will work itself out. You know, there are some people you can attack the conspiracy theories directly. There are others that you have to attack the underlying issue, but there's always an underlying issue. And I suggest to people also, and I know this sounds silly, I suggest like South Park, because South Park makes fun of both sides equally. So if you're like a lefty, you can sit down with some right-wing guy and you can both laugh at the same jokes. And that element, I think, can open up a dialogue. Like, oh, it was really funny when they made that joke about libs. Yeah, you know, and that joke they made about conservatives. And, you know, and it, I think there's something powerful to the world of South Park. And I think there's something powerful. Trey Parker and Matt Stone were once interviewed and they're like, oh, your politics are all over the place. What's your opinion? And one of them remarked, well, we hate liberals as much as we hate conservatives. And we really fucking hate conservatives. That was like their quote. I'm sorry. Am I allowed to say bad words?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. And to me, I really like that. And I think that could be used very gently. If all else fails, if you guys have nothing in common, let's watch South Park. Let's make fun of each other. And that's really what every South Park is it's liberals laughing at conservatives who are laughing at liberals, and and use that, you know, you pop culture is one of the reasons why we're all so crazy. Well, let's use that to become uncrazy. And I mean, there's no studies about that or anything, but from someone who was there, I enjoy South Park just as much now as I did when I was a conspiracy theorist. So you can find that central ground and get them to open up. And once they open up, you're going to find out this isn't about kids in the basement of a pizza parlor. This is, oh my God, like your wife cheated on you. You know, that there's something underneath it all. Sorry, that was a long-winded explanation, but yeah.
No, that was fantastic. I that's such a great suggestion, watching South Park together, because like it's true. Even if it doesn't help pull them out of the rabbit hole, there is no harm that can come from laughing together, you know? And also I think it's a powerful thing to be able to see the humor in yourself and the things that you believe, and ridicule is a powerful tool in breaking down bad ideas, in my personal opinion.
And one of my favorite things about South Park was they didn't believe in climate change, and they even mocked it. And then years later, when they changed And when they finally came to the realization that it was real, they did a few episodes where they apologized to Al Gore. And, you know, some people would just go back and say, let's delete this episode forever, you know. But they said, you know, keep that episode out there. But, hey, we're sorry, Man Bear Pig. We're sorry. We're super serial and we're sorry. And that to me, you know, and show that, you know, show them that. Be like, here's that, what is it, the day after yesterday, or the name of the anti-climate change episode. And let's watch that episode, and then let's watch Man Bear Pig, and then let's watch the episode where they're apologizing. And you don't even have to make a commentary.
Yeah. That is such a good point too, because I think one of the biggest problems with the way we interact with each other today and why everybody's so divided is because so many people expect that they need to be right, like correct. And they never accept that they've made a mistake, or they don't have their mind open to new information. I've heard so many people say, it doesn't matter what you say to me, I will never change my mind. And that's such a terrible way to look at the world. Like, I've changed so much since I started blogging in 2014. I used to say some things that make me cringe today. You know what I mean? And I own that, because I personally think it's something to be proud of that you've grown, right? I think that growth is something to strive for. But unfortunately, the world that we live in today, it's like, I need to be right today and forever about this one thing. And they feel like admitting that they were once wrong about it is like admitting weakness of some kind, which is just so weird to me.
Well, think about it, like whiteout, the little white nail polish type stuff. Like, that's an item that was created because people make mistakes. Like, think about that. Like, there's something powerful in that imagery that, you know, and not as many people will use it nowadays because of technology, but just think about that. Like, someone created a product because we make mistakes. Every pencil has an eraser. Also you can't enjoy the episodes where they apologize to Al Gore without having seen the episodes where they make fun of him. So you're missing part of the story without the mistake.
Yeah. And I don't know. There's just people refuse to see the nuance in everything. You know, it's black and white, and it makes it very, very challenging to communicate with other people these days, especially on the internet. So yeah, that is a very powerful suggestion. I think our listeners are going to really enjoy that. I think we're going to have a lot of people watching South Park with their QAnon loved ones.
And I also make this suggestion too. If you're dealing with someone who is always in front of the computer, all right, you know, most conspiracy theorists are always in front of the computer, and they have this sense of powerlessness and they want to be in control. It's the best $1,000 you'll ever spend. Buy them all of The Sims 4, all of the expansion packs, all of the little sets and everything. Sit them down in front of their computer and say, here, now you're in control. Now you're the god of your own. And I will be dead serious. I feel a deep shame in my heart whenever I log on to my Sims and it's like, you've logged in this many hours of Sims. I'm like, oh God, am I that much of a loser? But you can get lost in this world, and you can be a good god or a bad god. And you can do all these. There's even with the Strangerville expansion, there's NPCs walking around town. And if you click on them, they'll have a tinfoil hat and it'll say conspiracy, conspiracy theorist. But if you can get them in front of that computer and be like, hey, build a world. Now, the downside of that is, depending on how deep they are they going to start believing in simulation theory? But it's also demonstrative of, you know, okay, you're controlling these little people. You're the god. But then when you log off, you come back and you're like, how the hell did Jim Bob die? What happened to Jim Bob while I was logged off? It also demonstrates that no matter how under control something is, there's still random chaos. So I think The Sims can also be a tool. And if anyone out there is listening who is a Sims modder, please get in contact with me, because I want to create a QAnon mod for The Sims, where it emulates going down the rabbit hole and how people in that world interact with you and stuff. So I think that would be good. But yeah, Sims and South Park, I think, you know, just shell out the $1,000, get them a new laptop. I mean, we're looking at maybe a $3,000 total investment. Be like, well, you know, he hasn't emerged from his bedroom in 2 days, and I think that's Cheeto dust in his hair. But he's not doing conspiracy theories anymore. You know, it's like when people kick heroin, they go on methadone, and then they need something to kick the methadone. You take it in little tiny steps.
Yeah. We actually, it was towards the beginning of our podcast, we actually interviewed someone who was, they claimed, an ex-conspiracy theorist. And when we got on with him, it was like all over the place. And it was very clear that he was still kind of fighting with himself on all of this stuff. And it was very sad to see. And it was like he was still, like, all he wanted to talk about was the theories. And that's not what our podcast is about, right? Like, our podcast is about the relationships and how they're affected by this, and how, like, the human side of it, how you talk to them, how we treat each other. And he just wanted to talk about, like, Pizzagate and Hillary's emails and all of the stuff, right? And it's like, you could see that it was an addiction. Like, he didn't, by his own admission, he didn't believe this stuff anymore, but he couldn't stop talking about it. And it was we couldn't actually use that interview because it was so all over the place. And he was such a smart guy too. It was really sad that we couldn't use it, but I felt for him. I really felt for him. I hope that he was able to continue to pull himself away from this, because I think it was just too early for him to talk about it.
And it's also, you know, I think everyone kind of makes a joke about it. Like, oh, look at this idiot. He believes in this. Or what a dumbass. Yeah, we joke like that. But the facts and the reality of it is, you know, when you see the anti-vax doctor and your brain is struggling with that, don't do that to yourself, because it is a fact that incredibly intelligent, brilliant people can be idiots. I mean, Professor Idiot, that's what we'll call it. We'll call it Professor Idiot. You know, you can be a completely brilliant person. And, you know, like the Nobel Prize syndrome. Everyone else says, this person, they win the Nobel Prize, and then afterwards they're just like babbling at walls or something. You know, you don't have to be dumb to be a conspiracy theorist at all. You don't have to be.
Yeah. like both my parents are very, very smart people. And in a sense, I think sometimes that even adds to it, just because they, like my dad raised my brother and I to question everything. We didn't have any religion growing up, but if we had to pick something, it would be critical thinking. He was constantly talking about critical thought and how important it is and how to not just accept what people tell you and question everything. And I think that is part of the attitude that led to, and I think that that's a good attitude. I do. I agree with him. Right. But I think it also is part of what led him down the rabbit hole, you know, because it's like now he's questioning things that are fully evidenced, you know? And that's where, like, you have to have a point where you accept something as a fact, right? Like, you can't just continue questioning forever despite it being proven to you. And that's kind of, I think, where my dad's gone wrong. But they both very smart people. So they both have degrees from prestigious Canadian universities. They had good long careers. My dad was a psychologist. My mom was a school teacher. And yeah, both very, very smart. So it's not something that discriminates. You can have any IQ and still fall down the rabbit hole.
Yeah. And, you know, I like to tell people that it's the conspiracy theory. And well, it's not just me saying this. Experts, real experts have said this, that conspiracy theories are essentially hyperactive skeptics. Your skeptical nature is in overdrive. And if you as an intelligent person are skeptical about enough, and you know, do the what was it, Plato, the why, if you do that, eventually you're going to be standing right near the Arctic wall of the flat earth, you know. if you're skeptical about enough, then that's where it will lead. So you know, yeah, question reality, but don't lose your mind, you know, and that's another common misconception is that, you know, oh, conspiracy theorists are dumb and crazy. No, like, you know, they're not dumb, you know, they vary. The scale of intelligence varies among conspiracy theories. It's a broad spectrum. But they're not necessarily crazy either. You could be a completely sane, normal person, but your mental health will decline because it's what's that French word for shared delusion? If you know, if you spend enough time in these communities, you can start becoming mentally ill because you see it with the targeted individuals. And, man, that's a tough one to look at when you read targeted individuals. And, it's just, you're not necessarily crazy and you're not necessarily dumb. And you could be black, you could be white, gay, straight, cis, whatever. And it doesn't matter. And I always tell people, like, it doesn't make sense. Don't try to make sense of it. Don't, because you will drive yourself crazy trying to understand how someone with a doctorate in this or a doctorate in that is talking about, you know, flat earth. And you're like, how? Don't try and figure it out because you will go crazy.
Yeah, that's very true. It's definitely something that I've spent way too much time thinking about myself, but now I've just kind of come to terms with it, and we have this kind of agreement that we don't talk about it when we're around them, and so we can just have a normal relationship. But it still sucks because it's all surface stuff, right? You can't go very deep. And when you're close with somebody and you lose that, it's a challenge.
Yeah. I think I want to say this for the recording so everyone can hear it. I think you taking your personal experiences and your pain and trying to help other people with that, I think that's beautiful. That's like the 9/11 Blood Brothers story. That's the beauty that comes out of your pain. And I think that's something very powerful and raw. And I think that's very amazing that you're doing that. I really do.
Well, thank you. I honestly, I'm just that, like, I've always written my whole life, and I've always raised by a therapist. My dad was a psychologist, and just encouraged to talk about everything that ever bothered me, you know? So now it's like, I am compelled when something bothers me to just, I can't stop talking about it. So yeah, it's the perfect podcast topic.
And you know what? There might be one person out there who listens to an episode and something resonates in them. The butterfly effect. We don't know how far our actions will carry. You know, but you know, that random person that you smile at the grocery store, they might have been on their way home to kill themselves or something. And just that smile from a stranger, you know, like those Chicken Soup for the Soul stories, we never know how far our actions will carry. So any little hope, any little chance, you know, that you have to try and make a difference, do it. Even if it's smiling at that guy at the grocery store, you know?
So my last question is, what do you think the solution is here? How do we make changes in our world to ensure that fewer people fall down the rabbit hole?
Wow, that's a really tough one. That I think one of the things that we need to first understand is the difference between systemic and nefarious, like conspiracies, like hypernormalization, the documentary. It comes across as a conspiracy theory, but they're talking about real systemic issues. And if we can kind of separate systemic from nefarious, the you know, like I tell people, the systemic nature of 9/11 was, it was cheaper to put less stairwells in those buildings. That wasn't really a conspiracy, but that's something that's just baked into us, you know? And that's why so many people died that day. But it wasn't, so, you know, George Bush wasn't like, yeehaw, let's take these buildings down, you know? So if we can understand, I try to explain to people, like, you're on the right track, but you're on the wrong conspiracy. And I think that if you can kind of, like, okay, MK Ultra was really bad, but let's talk about how it really failed. And let's also talk about how there were a bunch of bumbling idiots too, you know? So there's a systemic and nefarious nature to MK Ultra. I don't know about you, but I've never worked for a company who put out memos, don't drink the punch. Why can't I drink the punch at any parties? Because they were dosing each other at parties. You know, so there's a systemic nature and a nefarious nature. And tried to separate the two. I don't know if that's really a good answer, but, you know, try to help people realize that there are real conspiracies out there. There's a difference between a conspiracy theory and a conspiracy. And MKUltra was a conspiracy. COINTELPRO was a conspiracy. Tuskegee was a conspiracy. The pogroms and the Shoah was a conspiracy, you know, and let's try to understand the difference between the two. And that there's no real way to do that. And we need better education. We need less billionaires. We, you know, I'm going to go all socialist now, but there needs to be a better distribution of wealth, better access to healthcare. I mean, we've seen it so many times. I call them MAGAnon. It's basically like the mainstreaming of QAnon. Like, you see these Trump supporters on camera, and some of them, you see they have no teeth, they're gaunt, they don't look healthy, and they're complaining about the Democrats spending too much. Man, no, shut up about that. You need health care. I can see that. I'm not a doctor. I can see that if you had better access to education and health, you would be a better person. And again, I'm not saying conspiracy theorists are uneducated or dumb, but if we could focus on education and health, that everyone gets some form of health care, everyone gets some form of education. Everything, well, you know, I'm not saying everything, it's not a panacea, but it would go, a lot of this would fit, you know, get better, because Maslow's hierarchy of needs. If your basic needs aren't being met, then you're not going to get to any level of comfort or happiness in your life. So, you know, healthcare, education, and, you know, no billionaires. No, not even my boss, George Soros. I don't even like my boss.
And mental health. I think the healthcare has to include very serious
mental health. Yeah. And that's, it's so ignored.
It is. And it's still taboo. It's still like, there's a lot of people from our generation, where John and I are Gen X, where it's like, it wasn't even until we were in our 40s that we started to realize that, you know, medication for mental health can be a good thing. And like, it's just so, it was always so taboo. Even I was raised by a therapist, and even with that, it was like, you didn't tell people if you were having mental health issues. You know, like, taking medication was always a last resort rather than something that you could do right away to begin your journey to better mental health. And it's crazy that we're still treating it that way. And like, I can tell you from personal experience that just accepting those things and understanding that the medication is okay and that this is the beginning of a journey and all of that stuff, it changes your life. It makes things so much better. And like, we have a daughter who has benefited from it, and other people in our lives have benefited from mental health care and access to medications for mental health conditions. So it's just so weird that it's still such a taboo thing.
It is. And that, if I could just plug the organization I'm involved with, that kind of makes a good segue. You know, with mental health, we have support groups for people who lost a loved one to suicide or homicide. We have sexual assault support groups. We have Al-Anon. We have all of that stuff. You know, there's a support group for, and I always go back to it, heroin. There are support groups for crack, cocaine, homelessness, everything. There's not a support system for conspiracy theorists. And we need to see this. But we need to see conspiracy theories just like every other element that people need support with. And I'm involved where we're in the process of registering as a 501c3 nonprofit. It's called the American Information Integrity Alliance. And there's two parts of it. The main part will be, you know, people combating disinformation and misinformation. And the second part is what I'm the head of, and that's called DOUT, which stands for Discussing Our Unusual Beliefs Together. And it's a group for former conspiracy theorists, by former conspiracy theorists, and it's going to be a place to get support. And we're eventually going to have a system in place where, you know, like the old AA thing where they would wear penny loafers and put quarters in them. So if they felt like they were going to need a drink, they would call someone from a payphone. We're going to kind of have that to it where if someone feels like they're getting pulled back. And it's also going to be a place where you can discuss these weird beliefs you used to have without getting pulled back in. And we're working on a wiki for, you know, questions like that are related to this, like Great Replacement, Alex Jones, David Icke, all, you know, all these different elements. And you're going to be able to get quick and easy answers to some of these questions. But, you know, it's because there's fun in talking about those conspiracy theories, even if you don't believe in them anymore, but there should be a safe place. So that's what DOUT is going to be. And this is my passion that I get to do this. And you know, we're just starting out. We have a very basic website, and I can give you that later if you want to put it in the show notes. And
yeah, for sure.
And our email is doubtistheway@protonmail.com. And so, you know, and I encourage anyone, if you, I can't offer you a definitive solution or a definitive answer, but if you just need to tell your story, I can do that. And once we get further along, we're going to have this community and it'll be like a barbecue anon party.
That's awesome. That is fantastic.
We're trying to get people from like every segment. Like we have a former Christian identity person. We have a former anti-vaxxer. I'm kind of, you know, a mix of a whole bunch of different things. And we have Jitarth, who's former QAnon. So we have, and I have a friend, shout out to Gary in Massachusetts. He was really deep in the right-wing rabbit hole. And he's not ready to jump into DOUT just yet, but he's been telling his therapist about us. And that just makes me feel warm and squishy that the fact that he knows that we're doing this means something to him. So it's, you know, and I always tell people, you know, our catchphrase is doubt is the way out, but that is the truth. And I tell people, when you feel that doubt in your head, listen to that. Listen to, you know, stories of people who just narrowly missed becoming Ted Bundy's victim. They're like, I just had that weird feeling and I'm glad I listened to it. And listen to that little voice when you hear it in your head and it's telling you, no, this stuff isn't making sense anymore. Listen to that doubt. And that's how you get out. That really is how you get out. And I tell everyone, it might take a little bit of time, but speak out, speak up, and speak often. Tell your story. Because conspiracy theorists, they're so happy to tell their stories. You should be just as excited to tell yours, even if yours has a little bit of shame in it. So what? Let's embrace that shame. Let's embrace our past idiocy. You know, just like how therapy and medication isn't as weird as it used to be. Let's normalize having been weird. Let's make that okay. Make it okay to be a former. And then other people will see that. And I'm kind of hoping that there's a social contagion.
That's cool. That's really cool about the organization. I will definitely put the links to that in the show notes. So where else can people find you if they want to follow you?
I'm on Twitter at Mick Pasteface. It was originally a Ralph Wiggum thing. So, yeah. And I'm on Instagram at the Derp State. You could find me. I'm the little anti-Q. And I'm on TikTok at Steph's Stuffed Animals. And that's all one word. I record videos with my stuffed animals and my one character, Toothy. He's always getting into trouble. I caught him reading Q drops the one time. But I use my stuffed animals as a way to kind of play around with some of these, the conspiracy theory topics, you know?
Cool.
So that's just fun for me. I like doing the voices. It's fun.
Well, we will put all those links down below so people can find you, but I would really want to thank you for joining us and giving us your story, because I like really think that a lot of our listeners are looking for some kind of hope. I've had a couple of messages from people. How come you never share any success stories? And it's like, well, because there aren't a lot. And even when there are, people don't necessarily want to talk about it. You know, they don't want to say what they used to believe in. So I really appreciate you coming on here and giving our listeners some kind of hope.
And I appreciate what you're doing. And I just want everyone out there to understand that you may feel like there's no recovery out there, but for every person who does speak up like I do, there are so many more who have recovered, but they're silent. So realize that recovery is kind of underreported. There may be more than you think. And I like to use the Lestat line, come out wherever you are, you know, come out, and it's okay. And, you know, for people out there who feel alone, we'll accept you, man. I'll give you a hug.
That's awesome. Thank you so much.
Yes, and thank you.
I'm so grateful that Stephanie not only found her way out of these conspiracy theories, but she was also willing to share her story with us. It is so hard to do this podcast week in and week out and never be able to share success stories with you. So thank you so much, Stephanie, for giving our listeners that little piece of hope that you've provided today. And thank you so much for the hard work that you do to fight misinformation, conspiratorial thinking, and to provide ex-conspiracy theorists with, you know, a nice place to go when they find their way out. Stephanie is clearly living proof that there's always a reason to hang on to that little bit of hope. Please be sure to follow Stephanie at the links we've provided in the show notes and maybe get involved in some of her projects to help fight this phenomenon. We'd love to have your support as well on Patreon. The link for that is in the show notes. You're going to get access to ad-free episodes, patron-only episodes, and bonuses. So you get tons. So it's totally worth it to go sign up. And be sure to subscribe and like this podcast on YouTube. That really helps us as well. Thank you so much for listening.